It is our privilege today to study Perek Chet, the 8th chapter of Sefer Yeshayahu. As you're no doubt aware, the chapter's divisions are artificial. They were created in the Middle Ages by Christian scholars who sought an easy way to reference chapters. They're not an original Jewish division, and thus they do not necessarily represent the breaks in ideas in the prophet's work. Thus, Perek Chet, the 8th chapter of Yeshayahu, was really a continuation of Perek Zayin, the 7th chapter. It continues the narrative of the events of 738 to 734, focusing specifically on one aspect thereof. As we saw in Perek Zayin, 7th chapter, the king of Yehuda, Ahaz, entered an agreement with Assyria, in which he submitted to Assyrian authority and recognized the Syrian overlordship. This was the result of his fear from two other kings, the king Pekah, king of Israel, and Ritzin, king of Aram, who together had joined themselves in an attack on Jerusalem. So to avoid that attack, he sought to submit and gain the protection of Assyria. Yeshayahu at the time had counseled neutrality, had advised against entering an alliance and submission to Assyria. Our chapter, Perek Chet, deals with the consequences of this submission to Assyria and the question of whether this was in fact an advisable thing for the king to do and how it indicates a lack of faith in God. So we now begin Perek Chet. Vayomer Hashem Elai, Kach Lecha Gilayon Gadol, Uchetov alav becheret enosh, lemaher shalal chashbaz. God commands the prophet, take a large writing surface and write upon it with the human implement, lemaher shalal chashbaz. Now, maher shalal chashbaz literally means to hasten spoil, speed up the booty. With reference to booty and spoils that are taken after war. Ve'aida li edim ne'emanim et Uriah ha-kohen ve'et Zechariahu ben Yeverechiahu. The prophet says, I appointed two witnesses, namely Uriah the priest and Zechariah son of Yeverechiah. Ve'akrav el hanviah v'tahar v'telet ben. I came near the prophetess, in other words my wife, and she had a child. Vayomer Hashem Elai, Krashmo Maher Shalal Chashbaz. God said, take that very name that you just wrote on this document, Maher Shalal Chashbaz, and give this name to your son. What's the point? Ki beterem yeda hanar kroavi v'imi, yisa et chel damesek v'et shalal shomron lifnei melech Ashur. This is in some ways a parallel to the prophecy about Immanuel in the previous chapter, as we read in Perek Chet Pasuk Daled, Ki beterem yeda hanar kro avi v'imi, before the child will know how to say mummy or daddy, he will bear chel damesek ve'et shlal shamron lifnei melech Ashur. He will carry the wealth of Damascus and the booty of Shamron before the king of Assyria. In other words, the king, before the child grows up, king of Assyria will conquer Damascus and Shamron, which is something we saw in the last chapter. As we saw in the last chapter, this is something which is positive in the immediate sense. It removes the threat from Aram and from Israel, who are threatening Yehuda. On the other hand, it has long-term consequences because it involves Assyrian intervention into the inner workings of the states surrounding Yehuda, and that will ultimately be to Yehuda's detriment. Now, in Pesukim Hei Techet, we have another unit which reflects why it is that Yehuda is going to suffer from the Assyrians, and it uses water imagery. As we saw at the very beginning of Perek Zayin, the initial prophecy in which the prophet counsels Ahaz to remain neutral was delivered at one of Yerushalayim's water sources, at the output, at the edge of the tut of the channel leading from the upper pool. Here we have references to another of Yerushalayim's water sources, the one water source which is consistent, namely the Shiloach, which is the tunnel that is drawn from the Gihon spring. The Shiloach is the pool that is derived ultimately from the Shiloach spring through a series of tunnels. We know the Shiloach pool from the time of Chizkiyahu, but it is possible that there are earlier pools with this name from before the time of Chizkiyahu, perhaps in a slightly different location, which are known as Shiloach as well, because Shiloach means literally that which is sent. And so the water is sent, is transported, and so the Shiloach pool may be any pool which derives from the Gihon spring. I would suggest this because, as we know today, if you've been to Ir David, you can see the output of the Canaanite water system, which preceded Chizkiyahu. This Canaanite water system, long before Chizkiyahu, leads us to a point which is halfway between the Gihon spring and the pool of Chizkiyahu. For more on this, look at cityofdavid.org. Which gives you a lot of information about the archaeology of Ir David, the Jerusalem of the time of the First Temple. Continuing on with Psukim Hei Dechet, which is our important unit. Vayosef Hashem daber elai od lemor. God spoke to me again, saying, Yan ki ma'as ha'am hazet mehashiloach ha'ochim la'at, u'mesos et retzinu ven remalyahu, because the people have rejected the waters of Shiloach, which go slowly, and have become excited about Ritzin and Ben Remaliahu. In other words, the people have rejected the defensibility of Yerushalayim, which is symbolized by the water source Shiloach, which allows Jerusalem to have water even under siege. And so the people have rejected that idea that we can defend Yerushalayim without recourse to foreign aid. Rather, they are excited about the attack of Israel and Aram, indicated by the kings Ritzin and Ben Remaliahu. Therefore, what will happen? You like water? You will get water. Lachen, v'lachen, hine Hashem ma'ale aleihem et mehanahar ha'atzumim v'harabim, et melech Ashur v'et kol kivodo v'ala al kol afikav v'halach al kol gidotav. Therefore, God will bring upon you the waters of the river, in other words, the waters of the Euphrates, which are powerful and mighty, namely, the king of Assyria, with all his honor. He will go up over all of their channels and go through all the and rise above all the banks. V'chalaf b'Yehuda shatav ve'avar ad savar yagia. He will go through Yehuda, washing and passing until the neck. V'hayam utot knafav milo rochav atzecha Immanuel. The spread of his wings will fill your land, O Immanuel. This is a prophecy about the arrival of the Assyrian king to attack, to cause damage to Judah. The Assyrian king's arrival here is compared to the waters of a river which flood the land. And in fact, the Assyrian king in his own texts compares himself to a raging torrent who floods the land. There's one important point here, which we do not, of course, find in the Assyrian king's own writings, namely, the limits on the Assyrian king. Despite the fact that he will fill Yehuda and fill all its channels, he will nevertheless reach only until the neck. In other words, he will not drown Yehuda. He will cause Yehuda grievous harm, but like a flood which reaches only until a person's neck, cannot actually kill a person, so too will he not actually destroy Yehuda. And the prophecy is addressed to Immanuel. The last part of the prophecy uses a different image, not only the idea of a flood, but also the idea of wingspan, which is important because this is another image we find in Assyria, the god of Assyria, actually not the king, indicated by a winged sun disk. And so that may be another example of Yeshaya's use of Assyrian imagery and twisting it in certain ways. Here it's used to deny the existence of the god because he denies the wingspan of, he denies the reference to the god here and seems to refer to it as an image of the king rather than the god of Assyria. But the basic point, which is critical here, is that the Assyrian advance will cause damage to Yehuda, even though Yehuda has sought Assyrian protection. that damage will not be limitless, that damage will be contained, and God will protect Yehuda from the folly of it, the result of its own folly. God will protect Yehuda from being totally destroyed by the Assyrian king, but it will nevertheless suffer the advance of Assyria. This is expressed in Pasuk Tet, Ra'u amim vachotu, v'ha'azinu kol merchakei aretz. Hit'azeru vachotu, hit'azeru vachotu. Tremble, O nations, and shake, and listen, all the faraway places in the world. Gird yourselves and tremble, and tremble. Gird yourselves and tremble. In other words, prepare for war with terror. This is an example of how nations are preparing for war with Assyria, knowing that they will be defeated. Nevertheless, Yehuda's position is somewhat different. Utsu etza v'tufar, dabru davar v'lo yakum ki imanu el. Even though they counsel, it shall be. Even though they take counsel, or more accurately, even though they plan strategies, it shall be overturned. They speak, and it will not happen, for God is with us. Immanuel here as a positive sign, whereas up to now it's been somewhat of a negative sign. Here it becomes once again a positive sign, even though other nations plan to invade Yehuda, plan to bring cause Yehuda to firm up their alliance with Assyria and thus cause even more harm to themselves. Nevertheless, this will not happen, for God is with us. And the prophet in the next several verses elaborates the idea of divine protection and why it is important. Here he does not only speak about divine protection in a physical sense, but also about the idea of who owns your mind. One can form an alliance with Assyria while at the same time retaining independence in a sort of intellectual sphere, in a values sphere. Here the prophet seems to be implying that many people in Yehuda see Assyria as the be-all and end-all of protection, and in that sense they forget God. The next several psukim are a reminder that those who seek loyalty to God cannot at the same time claim that Assyria, or for that matter any other world power, is the be-all and end-all of protection. Protection begins with God. Kicho amar Hashem elai, kechezkat hayad, v'yisureni b'derech milechet b'derech ha'am hazeh lemor. Thus said God to me, holding on to my hand, and chastising me that I not go in the path of this people, saying, Lo tumrun kesher lechol asher yomar ha'am hazeh kasher, ve'et mora'o lo tir'u v'lo ta'aritzu. Do not say, do not say treason, or treasonous grouping together, treasonous party, to about all that which these people say is a treasonous party. That which they fear, do not fear, and do not tremble before it. What seems to be the case here, as Rashi indicates, is that in later periods, the kings of Yehuda developed a more anti-Assyrian policy. Rashi sees this as a reference to the time of King Chizkiyahu, the son of Ahaz. During his period, he developed an anti-Assyrian policy of resisting Assyria. Nevertheless, other officials in his palace, according to the Gemara and Sanhedrin, were more pro-Assyrian. Now, we have no historical evidence that makes it clear that there are people in Chizkiyahu's palace who are pro-Assyrian. But it's reasonable that, given what we know about the time of Chizkiyahu, that there would have been a pro-Assyrian party within Yehuda. Certainly in the time of Ahaz, there were various parties within Yehuda, some who wanted to join the alliance with Aram and with Israel, some who wanted submission to Assyria, and a few who, like the prophet, counseled neutrality. And so the prophet here is saying, do not be swayed by all the political talk within the people, and do not necessarily fear that which the people fear. In other words, do not be led along by political currents. Rather, Pasuk Yud Gimel 13, Et Hashem Tzvakot Oto Takdishu, Hu Mora Achem V'Hu Ma'aritzchem. Rather, sanctify Hashem Tzvakot, the God, the Lord of Hosts. What does it mean to sanctify God, the Lord of Hosts? It means to consider Him the source of terror, Him, the one whom you see as an overlord. And this is really important, this idea of terror and overlordship, because these are the two twin themes of Assyrian dominion. And so the prophet here is advising people to see God as the ultimate source of power and awe in the world, rather than seeing Assyria or any other political power as a source of terror and awe. The next pasuk is quite difficult. I will read it and suggest some possible interpretations, but I will not solve its difficulties. V'haya le'mikdash ule'eve negef ule'tzur michshol l'shnei vatei Yisrael le'fach ule'mokesh li'yoshev Yerushalayim. The pasuk seems to suggest that this policy of seeking protection and seeing other nations as the source of awe and the source of terror and the source of dominion in the world will lead to disaster. It will lead to michshol, a stumbling block. It will lead to be a pach and mokesh, a trap and a pit for those who, the two houses of Israel, in other words, both the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom of Israel, southern kingdom of Yehuda, both will suffer from this, as will the people of Yerushalayim. The pasuk, however, is difficult. And despite the fact that, that these are traps, pasuk tetvav, v'chashlu barabim, v'chashlu vam rabim, v'nafelu v'nishbaru, v'nokshu v'nilkadu. Many will stumble in this, they will fall down, they will be broken, they will be trapped and caught. Now, who are those who will not be trapped and caught by this trap of entering alliances and seeing other countries as the source of awe and dominion and power in the world? The next three psukim illustrate whom the prophet thinks are those who will not be trapped. Tzor te'uda, chatom Torah belimudai, tie up the document, seal up Torah in my training, says the prophet. The Targum here interprets this pasuk as indicating that somehow the teaching of God should in some way be hidden from those masses. That is not necessarily the only way to understand this this prophecy. Rashi here understands the Tzor Te'uda as referring to a warning to the people. V'chikiti l'Hashem hamastir panav mibeit Yaakov v'kiveti lo. This is ultimately the message of the prophet. I wait for God who hides his face from the house of Yaakov, and I hope for him. I recognize that in the world there are various political forces at work. I am aware that behind those political forces is God. Even if I do not understand how it is that he operates, v'chikiti l'Hashem hamastir panav mibeit Yaakov v'kiveti lo. I wait for God who hides his face from the house of Yaakov, and I hope for him. Hine anochi v'hayeladim asher natan li Hashem le'otot ulemoftim b'Yisrael. Me'im Hashem tzvakot hashochen behar Tzion. Behold, me and the children whom God gives to me will serve as otot and moftim, will serve as signs and wonders in Israel from Hashem who dwells on Har Tzion. The prophet and those who are within his circle, those whom he has trained, his disciples, they will be the ones who will serve as signs and witness and wonders indicating that it is God who rules the world, and he is behind the political machinations of various countries. Even though the people may prefer to see only the physical world, the prophet and his disciples are aware of a divine power behind the physical world. Now, people are clearly despondent and distraught at the many different political machinations going on in Yehuda. The next series of psukim refer to this reality. V'chi yomru aleichem, dirshu el ha'ovot ve'el ha'idonim, ha'metzafzafim ve'hamahgim, halo. So when they will say to you, inquire of the various types of necromancers, sorcerers, soothsayers, and speakers in tongues. In other words, inquire of various types of magical beings who claim that they can communicate with the spiritual world without going through God. When people say that to you, what should the prophet respond? Halo am el elok elok hav yidrosh Be'ad ha'chayim el ha'metim. Each nation ought to seek out its own God. Halo am el Elohav yidrash. And the people respond, Be'ad ha'chayim el ha'metim. And now I'm joining pasuk 19 to pasuk 20. People respond, Be'ad ha'chayim el ha'metim li'torah v'li'te'udah. One should, for the sake of the living, one should inquire of the dead for instruction and for witness. That is the people's response. Despondent, they feel that it is necessary to inquire of various types of spiritual beings. The prophet responds with an oath formulation in the middle of Pasuk Kaf. Im lo yomru kadavar hazeh asher en lo shachar. This type of idea, inquiring of the dead, has no dawn, and this is a certain play on the people's thoughts. The people think of the dead as the source of all knowledge, and the prophet is responding, but the dead never see the dawn. The dead cannot see the rise of the sun, and so the dead are caught in that world. They are not the source of knowledge. The source of knowledge is the one who causes dawn to rise. In other words, the source of knowledge is God. Here the prophet continues with this idea that the people, because they refuse to acknowledge divine supremacy and see the Assyrian kings and the other kings of the period as a source of supremacy, will ultimately cause themselves grievous harm. Ve'avarba nikshevi ra'ev, ve'hayachi yirav hitkatzaf, ve'kilel be'malko uve'lohav, ufana lemala. This is a description of people who refuse to accept that God is supreme, and they will therefore suffer the indignities of attack. The next several psukim are quite difficult, and I will just look at them briefly. Vel eretz yabit, v'hine tzara v'chashecha, me'uf tzuka v'afela menudach. This is a description of people who are looking at the spirits, and what would the spirits say if they looked down at the earth? They look down at the earth is full of trouble, of darkness, of flying trouble, and darkness tossed down. In other words, this is a description of the period of the Assyrian attack. This image of darkness will be repulsed in the next parak, but before we get to it, the prophet concludes with one final pasuk, Ki lo mu'af la asher mutzak la. There is nevertheless something very troublesome about that which is seen from above. Ka'et harishon hekal artzan zivulun ve'artzan naftali ve'ha'acharon hichbid derech hayam ever hayarden galil hagoyim. The first time, and this refers to an early Aramean attack in the 9th century by King Ben-Hadad, who attacked in the lands of Zvulun and Naphtali. Ve'acharon, this refers to the Assyrian attack of 733, Hichbid derech hayam ever hayarden galil goyim. He goes on the way towards the sea, he goes to the Assyrians attacked in Transjordan, as well as in the Galil. This refers to the weightiness of the Assyrian attack of 733-732, which was directed against the Kingdom of Israel and the Kingdom of Aram, two kingdoms who had been part of an anti-Assyrian alliance, but which also caused harm to Yehuda, because the Assyrians in 733-732 attacked cities on the borders of Yehuda, including Gezer, which is located not far from Sha'alvim, Givton, which is just south of that, and various cities on the border between Yehuda and Plishtim. So while the attack was directed at Israel and at Aram, it also caused harm to Yehuda. And perhaps it would be preferable, and when we look at Pasuk Kaf Bet, to understand the idea of me'uf here as referring to exhaustion, not to understand it referring to flight. Vel eretz yabit, going back to Pasuk Kaf Bet, v'hinei tzara v'chashecha me'uf tzuka v'afela menudach. He looks down to the earth. He sees trouble and darkness, exhaustion, difficulty and darkness tossed down. And then the reminder in Pasuk Kaf Gimel that those who are attacking are not themselves tired. They are able to attack. Kilomu afla asher mutzakla. They are solid. They are not able to attack. They are attack on the, not like once upon a time, when they attacked only in Zvulun and Naphtali. Now they are attacking Ever Hayarden, Derech Hayam, Ever Hayarden, Galil Goyim. Now they are attacking on the way to the sea, in Transjordan, and in the Galilee. This image of the Assyrian attack of 733-732 is somewhat lightened as we move to the next paragraph.